Go. Head on to Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the Tuesday program. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. Thanks for all the kind wishes for a happy 5th anniversary that have come our way. Thank you very, very sincerely and very kindly. And to those of you who called in during the rerun of the show after Malloy's program last night, it was a pleasure talking with you as well. You are always welcome here. This is Conversation Radio, so I hope you will take advantage of that fact and jump in and speak your piece. Because the beginning of the end of the isolation is the realization that we are bigger than we know. We are stronger than we know. And I have to tell you that one of the reasons that Tim Prophet. Oh! God, thy name is irony. Tim Prophet is the head stomper from Kentucky. I always thought the band was the Kentucky Headhunters, not the Kentucky Head Stompers. But no, Tim Prophet is a Randian, and apparently an anarcho-Randian, head stomper. You know to that which to which I refer, right? You know that there was an event last night in Kentucky. A Rand Paul event, you know, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Because doctors deserve to live a comfort, they deserve to be comfortably well off. Well, he said it, I didn't. The fact that Daffy Duck beat him to the punch 50 years before is not my fault. No, there was a Rand Paul, there was a debate last night. And a Move On activist tried to approach Rand Paul to give him some phony baloney political stunt award for being the number one corporate prick in Kentucky or some such as that. Yeah. But, well, this is really not video that works on the radio. I'm going to go under the assumption that you have seen this by now, so you will get the idea of what we're talking about. Now, the Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist campaign said that there was some jockeying. There was jockeying. Well, you know, there's lots of jockeying in Kentucky. Jockeying, just everywhere jockeying. There was some jockeying back and forth. When in fact what happened was Rand Paul's supporter, and he's not just a supporter. This criminal, turns out to be a volunteer campaign coordinator for Rand Paul. There's pictures of him standing next to Rand Paul with his lips all pursed together like he's just done something, and well, Rand Paul's grinning like he's just had it done. That's that grin. But Rand Paul grabbed a woman by the hair as if to face curb her. This was outside, after all. It was on a sidewalk. and drove the woman's bodily to the ground. And during the process, her wig came off, her blonde wig. Otherwise, I suspect she would have gone face first into the curb. The intent on the part of Tim Prophet, a guy named Prophet, worshiping Rand Paul. We're going to have to build a shrine, temple, something. I mean, we got Christine O'Donnell's spokesman is named Moran. One of Rand Paul's volunteer campaign coordinator's name is Prophet. It ain't P-R-O-P-H-E-T either. It's P-R-O-F-I-T-T. You know, P-R-O-F-I-T-T, that's two T's for a double dose of your prophetness. Okay, so maybe that doesn't work. Lauren Valle, Vale, Val, don't get a pronouncer in the new media here. One of the things I miss about the old media, you got a pronouncer every morning. Lauren Valle, V-A-L-L-E, Valle, I don't know, was ground into the floor. And then another Rand Paul supporter stomped her head. Stomped her head. Well, never say that the Rand Paul campaign doesn't take immediate responsibility for the things that they start. Because, by God, Tim Prophet has been removed from his role as Bourbon County campaign coordinator. And he's been banned from campaign events. Oopsie. Tougher still when the best comment on it comes from a Fox Radio Rwanda host, Shepard Smith, who said, "I suppose if that's the worst that happens to you after you make a conscious decision to step on a woman, then you've probably come out pretty well." Tim Prophet, according to the Lexington police, is in the process of being served with a criminal summons. Here's a hint. That doesn't even carry the risk of arrest. It's a summons. It's not a warrant. Now, by God, if some liberal had done that, there would be a felony warrant out and 18 cops going after him. But then again, a liberal wouldn't do that because, well, you know, we're liberals. Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. A criminal summons. No arrests have been made. No arrests will be made. And Move On reports that Ms. Vale, Valle, Val, suffered a concussion and sprains to her shoulder and arm as a result of the stomping. Not surprising. She was bodily grabbed, thrown to the ground, and had her head stomped. Interestingly, this very day, as noted by the blog Barefoot and Progressive, it's a Kentucky liberal blog, a very good one, too. The blogger over there has done a magnificent job following the Rand Paul Libertarian Ophthalmologist campaign. Notes that Tim Prophet and Paulette Eads took out a full-page ad professing their undying support for Rand Paul this very day in the Lexington Herald Leader. By the way, the guy who held Ms. Valle down while Tim Prophet stomped her head, he's been identified as a teabagger. Mike Pisano. He's the assistant organizer for Kentucky Open Carry. I guess Ms. Vale, Ms. Valle, is lucky that he didn't just bust a cap in her ass. That's next. That's next. Let's see. Albert Hainsworth got, he's an NFL football player, just by comparison. Albert Hainsworth got a 4-game suspension for stomping the head of a Dallas Cowboy during a game some time back. Albert Hainsworth's pay loss was about $1.2 million. But it's okay if you're a Republican. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Head stomping. Head stomping. And it was planned to be much worse. Had the wig not come off, she would have been grabbed by the hair and her face would have been driven into, you know, with concomitant loss of teeth, flattening of nose, breaking of bones. Because that's how these bully boys operate. And, I don't know, maybe you get tired of this sort of thing after a while, but I gotta tell you, we've been here before. See, this is the problem. I don't see time as a linear function. Time is a web. And as such, it may not be a 2,000-year leap to find another similar instance. It may just be a matter of going one bracket over on the web, if you know what I mean. You could say, well, we've seen this kind of political thuggery before. You could talk about maybe Argentina. You could talk about Chile under Pinochet. You could talk about the Cambodia under Pol Pot. The re-education of the Vietnamese after the takeover of Saigon and the fall of the South. You could talk about a number of those things. I hesitate to talk about the Third Reich simply because the minute you say that, people think that, wow, you know, unless somebody shows up here wearing spiffy black uniforms goose-stepping, it's not really Nazis. Wrong. Wrong. This is the same kind of conduct. But I have a better example for you. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Publius Claudius Pulcher. Publius Claudius Pulcher. A very famous, a very high-born Roman of the late Roman Republic. When Pompey, Crassus, and Caesar formed their first triumvirate between 60 and 53 BC, he, as a tribune of the plebs, and he had to actually be adopted by a member of the plebs so that he could stop being patrician. He became a tribune of the plebs and passed a number of important laws that have been hailed to this day as among the most innovative urban legislative attempts in the history of Western civilization. Cicero, who survived him, vilified him every step of the way because Cicero was a shameless little climber. Publius Claudius Pulcher caused a lot of trouble because he had this notion that maybe the people of Rome had a little bit more right to rule their own lives than to simply be ruled by the rich, otherwise known as the senatorial and knight classes. He was definitely a troublemaker. And he was a scandal seeker. And eventually the power brokers began to decide that, well, it came to the determination that he was a danger. Claudius pulled together a group of troublemakers, not troublemakers, but, well, rabble-rousers. And in response to that, Titus Annius Milo Papianus, Titus Annius Milo Papianus, commonly known as Milo, pulled together a gang of ex-gladiators and bodyguards and bully boys and began beating the snot out of anybody who was thought to be associated with Claudius, up to the point where Milo himself murdered Claudius in cold blood on the Appian Way in 53 before the Common Era. And it was a slaughter. Milo was eventually prosecuted and sent into exile. But this is the sort of violence that plagued the end of the Roman Republic. Really? Exile? For murder? Yeah, really. Now, Cicero had hounded a man to his death, a man named Catilina, and had had men executed without trial, Roman citizens. And that was one of the things that Claudius was upset about, and Claudius prosecuted him and ran him out of town. You know, we know the name of Cicero, but we seldom remember the fact that he was not well esteemed inside ancient Rome because he was thought to, well, he was kind of like a bush. He claimed, he said things like, "I kept my country safe." If you pick up the Crayon book that George will be publishing sometime shortly after the November elections, you'll find George saying the same thing. "I'm proud of the fact that I shaved my country." It's a hell of a note when you save your country by sitting on your thumb while airplanes fly into buildings. That's some safekeeping there, George. But Publius Claudius was murdered for his political views in a republic whose ability to dialogue internally about the direction in which politics should go had come to naught. It had come to bullying and fisticuffs and eventually murder. That was 53 BCE. And inside less than a generation, Roman self-rule came to an end. No, there were other events. There was the dictatorship of Sulla. But Sulla, for all his bloodthirstiness, eventually set down his power, walked away, and went and lived in a villa by the sea and buggered little boys for the next 10 years until he died. Because he felt like he'd earned it. There was the Catiline conspiracy. There were the various and sundry civil wars. But it all happens in the space of about 70 years. And I think that's what we should pay attention to. The Roman Republic was some 500 years old. The Romans counted their origins from 753 BCE, ab urbe condita, from the founding of the city. 753 BCE. And the Republic itself was about 500 years old because the last of the kings had been run out about 250 years after the founding of the city. You know, if you look at the United States and our, 234 years of existence, what did I say last night about how the bricks come faster through the glass till you get to the point where you don't have time to get the glass back in before the next load of bricks come along. Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. And see, no one in 53 BC said, you know what, the murder of Claudius Pulcher is going to be a hallmark for the crap storm that we're about to weather. And the only thing that the power-hungry, just like the Republican Party, the only thing that the power-hungry could think about after Sulla's dictatorship was over 20 years previous was how to get their own hands on power again. You see, it's always the same struggle. It's the struggle between the people who have it all, have more and want it all, and the people who have little and would like to hang on to what little they have. It's always the same struggle. Whether it's the murder of Claudius or the assassination of John Kennedy, whether it's the assassination of Caesar, who, by the way, was actually a member of the Populares. You know, that we have failed to learn about or to remember our ancient history at our peril. Caesar was a member of the Popular Party. Caesar was what you would have been considered back in the day a liberal. He was very high-born, but he was raised among the common people of the of what was called the Sabura, which was the sort of beating plebeian heart of ancient Rome, off of the Palatine Hill, away from the Capitoline Hill, teeming alleyways of 4, 5, and 6-story insula apartment buildings. Caesar grew up among the immigrant masses of the Rome of his day. He grew up speaking Latin and Greek, of course, but he also would have come into contact with Syrians, Parthians, Jews of his day, Gauls of various and sundry form, Spaniards, Africans, Egyptians. What does this all mean? Why did I go here? Because, like I said, it is not a it's not a 2,050-year-old line that we're talking about. It is a leap across one ladder, one leg of a web, to a similar time when people were trying to hang on to just a little bit of popular sovereignty in the face of a determined right-wing authoritarian effort to snuff the last of it out. That's why I go here. And just as no one said, oh, well, you know, Milo murdered Publius Claudius in cold blood and he's going to get away with it. And no. Nobody sets up little signposts and says, you know, when we get to here, the trip to there becomes a lot shorter. And maybe the only reason no one does that is because not enough of us know history to be able to look at it and do that. And maybe I'm a little bit too full of myself to think that I can. But here in the past couple of weeks, there are a couple of moments that make me want to set up those little road markers, those little cultural Burma shave signs, if you will. A few weeks ago, a man's home was allowed to burn to the ground while the fire department watched, who wanted him to learn a lesson for not having paid his fire coverage assessment. Last night in Lexington, Kentucky, a bully boy, a Milo, if you will, because you got to remember, Milo was a climber. Milo had aspirations of his own, but he was someone else's creature. He was probably the creature of Gnaeus Pompeius Magnus, known as Pompey the Great. And Pompey was terrified of Appius Claudius Pulcher. Just Claudius. And so his creature did away with the threat. Well, to the same extent, Tim Prophet is the creature of Rand Paul. And if there's something to be noted, it is the fact that in neither instance did the chickens come home to roost. Milo, for cold-blooded murder, was sent into exile, and Tim Prophet has been told by the Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist campaign that he's no longer welcome at Rand Paul campaign events. But that's okay. There'll be a nudge and a wink along the way. This won't last. He'll be showing up for the rubber chicken dinners before too much longer, especially if Rand Paul wins. He'll become a valued constituent. Because that's how this works in systems that are devolving into chaos. Maybe that's what we need to do. Maybe we need to be just setting up these little signposts and noting them along the way. Maybe this at least will serve as some sort of means for us to hang on to some sense of perspective and understand where we are. Because one of the most confusing things is the thing that happens every so often when you look up and go, where am I going and why am I in this handbasket? So if nothing else, the next time you hear about some right-winger trying to stomp the life out of someone for being a liberal, just remember those wheelbarrows full of bricks and those of us who desperately try to keep glass in the windows. You know, the ability, there's something among people who are into urban planning and so forth, there's a touchstone, if you will. And they say that you can tell when a city or a neighborhood is beginning to go to hell by virtue of the fact that the windows don't get put back. When you get to the point where the people are so downtrodden and so worn out with it all that when the last window finally gets shot out, it doesn't get put back. Maybe a piece of plywood gets put up in its place. I was thinking about the other day when I was driving downtown, this little rural village where I live, to call it, well, downtown. And I noticed that what were once skylights along the sides of what had been the high school gymnasium and is now the middle school gymnasium, what had once been skylights are boarded up now because the county can no longer afford to keep glass in windows that people insist on breaking. Glass is one of those hallmarks of whether a civilization can stand or fall. Because glass is fragile. Yeah, I'm reminded by email by Clayton. He says, what about the congressman who received an envelope marked with swastikas filled with what the FBI called a toxic substance? Yeah, what about that? Thank you, Clayton. That was Raul Grijalva, a Democratic congressman from Arizona. It probably would take too much time to... But you know what? Send them in. Let's just make a list. You know the email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Don't make me do all this by myself. What about old white supremacists who shoot up Holocaust museums? What about men who get liquored up, get on the road, and drive to the Tides Foundation because Glenn Beck has told them that they're communists? How much difference is there between that and Popularis Est? Popularis Est! He's a populist. Populares sunt, they're populists. Sumes est is sunt. Populares sunt. The fact that this stuff is not electronically broadcast does not mean it has not happened before. We're there. And I hope Ms. Valle, Ms. Vale, Ms. Vall. And I'm not being a smartass, I just don't know how to pronounce her name. I hope she's okay. But you know what? Anybody who's ever had a concussion, you're not really okay. Because that means your brain has been bruised. And it may be 5 years, 10 years, or 50 years before you know exactly what happened when the right winger stomped on your head after it had been driven into the floor. Bless her heart, she came all the way from Washington, D.C. to deliver a parody certificate to Rand Paul on behalf of Move On. And for that, she had her head driven into the ground, and then Tim Prophet stomped her head. This is just a little bit frightening. And it's not just because it's a week before the election. Do you remember when the terrified white woman carved her own face and swore that she'd been attacked by one of them Negro Obama supporters 2 years ago about this time? Turns out she'd carved her own face because she screwed up in the mirror with the knife. Telling times. And of course, the old curse. May you live in interesting times. And if that is in fact the case, we are cursed indeed. It's 26 minutes before the hour. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. A little reminder, we are at about $430 away from making our fundraising goal for the month. Thanks to you, those of you who have made that happen. Can we? I can't tell you how important it is that we make that goal. Just once. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, as is the snail mail address. And I sincerely hope you can. Because somebody's got to be around And I'm not saying it's me. It's you. We've got to have some place to gather to tell each other it's going to be okay and to get each other through the night. And that's what I hope we do some of here. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
I love the sound of breaking glass, especially when I'm lonely. I need the noises of destruction.
When bumper music works out the way it does. That's Nick Lowe, and I love the sound of breaking glass. This is The Horn. It's Tuesday evening, and these things tie together. They really, really do. We just have to, we have to go through our little knot tying classes. What was it? Was it just late last week when that candidate in Texas said, "Armed revolution if the Republicans don't get their way is on the table"? They're ready. They're ready. And if they don't get what they want, they're willing to take to the streets, and they're armed, and they're dangerous. Because they aim for nothing less than the dismantling of this republic. As I said, it took a little over a generation for a 500-year-old republic to fall apart and to be placed, to be replaced with a dictatorship. And originally somewhat benign, but horrifying in its later manifestations. And that empire was replaced by absolute utter chaos and the end of everything that humans had known and learned over the course of about 3 millennia, and replaced by ignorance and religious superstition and concepts of heresy and blasphemy and women burned alive for bathing. In short, replaced by the church. We're still finding out things that the Romans and the Greeks knew that we didn't know they knew, because the knowledge had been destroyed, obliterated, and secreted away and suppressed by Mother Church, who stepped up to the plate in the chaos and filled the power vacuum. Don't be surprised if you see more of this. Because, you see, Rand Paul couldn't even be bothered to denounce it. You want to hear what passes for an apology among a godforsaken, sick, psychotic Republican? This is from Buck Passing 101. This is Tim Prophet. He says, a friend of mine went up to three policemen before Rand got there and told them about the girl who was standing there with that wig on and that she was getting ready to do something. Ms. Valle, Vale, said, the Rand Paul campaign knows me and they have expressed their distaste for my work before. She was surrounded before the incident, surrounded by five of Rand Paul's the Titus Annius Milo bully boys. What did they say to her? They said, we're here to do crowd control, and we might have to take somebody out. Nudge, nudge. Wink, wink. So, what passes for an apology? He said, well, the camera angle made the scuffle Monday night appear worse than it was. I'm sorry it came to that, and I apologize if it appeared overly forceful, but I was concerned about Rand's safety. What a pusillanimous wimp. A woman with a piece of paper is a threat to Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist's safety. So it takes five good, strong Southern men to subdue one woman? By God, we put her in her place. You know that's how they talk when they're done. I love those I'm sorry if apologies, those non-apology apologies. I'm sorry it came to that, and I apologize if it appeared overly forceful. He apologized if it appeared overly forceful. There's a damn gulf 10 miles wide between I apologize if it appeared overly forceful and I apologize for the overly forceful manner in which we did it, or the I apologize for the excessive use of force. Wow. And so, of course, the Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist campaign, Rand Paul in particular, went where else to address the situation? Why, of course, he went to talk to an attack blonde on Radio Rwanda.
We are just seconds away from speaking live with Rand Paul as we get a brand new poll on the race that the nation is talking about right now. It is the battle for the Senate seat in Kentucky, and it is white hot. After a debate that is making headlines coast to coast tonight, Rand Paul, the Republican, as you can see in these most recent numbers we just got in this morning, leading Jack Conway by about 7 points right now, and that is the brand new Fox News poll. We got lots of state numbers to look at this morning in a brand new hour of America's Newsroom, so we're really glad you're here. I'm Martha McCallum.
I'm Bill Hemmer, 7 days and counting now, right? We really get a snapshot right now what's happening in some of these critical races. Political banter inside, and now we have a brawl outside. As a female protester getting roughed up during demonstrations in the parking lot while Rand Paul and Jack Conway were debating on the inside in Kentucky. Her shoulder stepped on after being heckled by two men there.
What a mess. Things were a bit more civil during the discussion inside. Rand Paul is the Republican Senate candidate from Kentucky. Good to have you here, sir. Welcome.
Good to be with you, Martha.
So, yeah, let's deal with this couple right off the top. What was your reaction that, you know, folks who were wearing Rand Paul T-shirts and hats treated this woman this way?
We want everybody to be civil. We want this issue, the campaign, to be about issues. I will tell you that when we arrived, there was enormous passion on both sides. It really was something where you walk into a daze of lights flashing, people yelling and screaming, bumping up, and there was a bit of a crowd control.
God, I bet he hadn't experienced anything like that since the last time he got together with Aqua Buddha.
Control problem, and I don't want anybody, though, to be involved in things that aren't civil. I think this should always be about the issues, and it is an unusual situation to have so many people so passionate on both sides jockeying back and forth. And
jockeying. Like I said, they do a lot of jockeying in Kentucky.
It wasn't something that I liked or anybody liked about that situation. So
I didn't know nothing about it. I didn't do it. I wasn't there. And even if my people did it, he was only following orders.
I hope in the future it's going to be better.
Yeah, well, hopefully everybody out there will listen to that. And as you rightly point out, there's been a lot of tensions out there and a lot of excitement and a lot of passion, sometimes leading to things that we wish were not.
Well, I guess it's just too much to hope that somewhere along the way on Radio Rwanda somebody would offer up the classic, "Have you no shame, sir?" But let's be clear, and this is gonna come across as probably a little bit crappy on my part, but I'm gonna say it. I get a lot of emails and I'm on a lot of lists. I'd like to know if because I haven't. Has anyone seen an appeal go across the interweb tubes for the victim's medical cost to be covered? I haven't. But I got to tell you, I'm going to be really upset when I get that move, because I'll get it, you know, and you know you will too. You will get an email from Move On that recounts this horrifying story and then asks you to send $5 to pay for a full-page ad in the New York Times about it, or to put commercials on TV about it. And it's not that I'm mad at Move On. I'm mad at the media culture that makes that and it's going to be sick. I'm disgusted with a media culture that makes that prophecy, that makes that prediction viable. I hope I'm wrong, but based on past performance, I'm pretty sure I won't be. I'm going to go to the phones in a moment. You know, I've got a couple of lines open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. Corey, who is corresponding with us, from the state of Louisville in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, says it's sickening that this happened last night. Even more sickening is that there are some real big Southern gentlemen who also condoned the action. I saw a lot of "she deserved it," "she's a felon," "she did this as a stunt" in a bunch of local blogs and newspaper comments last night and today. Corey says, "I tuned in on a lark because I didn't think you would be in today, and I heard the very tail end of what I assume you were talking about. There's something that I don't know if you covered. One, the stomper was a coordinator of Paul's Bourbon County campaign, Tim Prophet." Yep. "Two, the tackler was Mike Pisano, who favors open carry." Yep. Was Mike Pisano present at that open carry rally in Frankfurt, where all the Rand Paul supporters brought their shooting guns? 2003, Tim Prophet contributed $2,500 to his campaign. Paul hasn't returned it yet. That I didn't know. And then this, and I think this is something we all need to pay attention to. Do you think that this will sway voters in the Commonwealth of Kentucky? My cynical opinion, no. Hell no! It may have gotten him some more votes. Women in Kentucky had better be afraid. Paul is for forcing women to carry the products of rape and incest to term. He has people in his campaign stomping on women on camera, and he still hasn't denied tying up that woman in college yet. Signed, Corey, in the state of Louisville, God help the Commonwealth. This is from Clayton. Bob, a friend of mine called to tell me that another male had his foot in Ms. Valle, in her crotch. Clayton adding, we need a letter with these factoids to send to our editors. Well, they're all laid out there. Grab the archive as soon as the show is over, and it's posted over at whiterosesociety.org. And pull together a letter to the editor. Jack in Shreveport says, Bob, do a sanity check on this first if you want to bring up the topics below. As reports on the attack on the woman at the Rand Paul event have come out, I've recalled the incident at the GOP convention where Amy Goodman and a couple of her colleagues were taken into custody. That was Minneapolis. I believe the same event was the one at which cops were dressed in full riot gear, their name tags not showing, and where some of their boots were placed on the necks of protesters. Correct. Again, Jack, that was the Republican National Convention in Minneapolis, 2008. I believe that same event was the one where police entered a house where a group of protesters were staying. You are correct, sir. Jack says, I just wanted to bring up another event to support the idea that these kinds of events are not isolated, but a trend. This is how they operate. Thugs engage in thuggish behavior. I hope that's not too hard for us to get our heads around. Let's not be shocked at this. If there's any surprise in all of this, it's that it hasn't gotten any worse. But it has. It has. We've got people with guns watching their magic TV box where the glowing body with the booming voice tells them to go and shoot up buildings in San Francisco. A couple of years ago where Bill O'Reilly said he didn't care if Al-Qaeda bombed the Coit Tower in San Francisco. Or Ann Coulter saying her only beef with Timothy McVeigh was that he didn't blow up the New York Times. You know, the best bet is probably to get hold of Dave Nywert's. This has all been collected. And if you want a reference work handy that you can just sort of annotate in the back every time a new one of these happens, you'd probably want to get hold of Dave Nywert's The Eliminationists. You can find it, and it's worth owning. William, writing from Hollywood, to query, what does this sort of thing say about us as Americans? When someone gets their head stomped on, regardless of their intent, when you have massy coal thugs disrupt a peaceful gathering as you had in West Virginia not so long ago, and a woman gets punched in the face, that woman was Judy Bonds, the woman who punched her in the face was told to go and sin no more. The man who came to the 4th of July picnic and threatened to slit the throats of a man and his infant son. He was given a fine and unsupervised probation that has long since ended. when we have some freak fly into an IRS building to make his own sick statement. Thank you, William. Certainly we've always had out-of-control people, but nothing ever like we see now. I have never seen campaigns with such slime tossing and hate, and this seems to get worse and worse and worse. How does this make us look to other countries or to the rest of the globe? I think in asking that question, you know the answer, William, don't you? Just with these few examples, who are we as a country, and where is the hope in hate and brutality? Has this sprung up out of fear and hard times since 2000 alone, or is the real face of what America has always been and accepts finally boiling to the surface, and to believe otherwise was just an illusion? Has the simple basic concept of treat others as you would have them treat you gone completely through one of those broken windows? I think you may be right, William. But what is important to remember is that we do not respond to like with like. We are better. And we will not stomp any heads. We will not do that. Because, frankly, as I've noted before, they've got guns and know how to use them. And on the other hand, there are a lot of liberals who go, I get neat mail from Bob, why are you talking about owning guns? Guns bad. Jesus. So I think we've got work to do on our hands tonight. Michael writing in and saying, if the left were to sink to the same level as the right, and I don't suggest we do, this lady needs to go on MSNBC with a neck brace and in a wheelchair, you know, just like that Kenneth Gladney fellow a while back. MSNBC also needs to edit out any video of her being okay afterwards, too, just like Fox News did for Gladney. Oh, and did you notice that according to Fox, she was just ruffled while Gladney was attacked? Coincidental use of language? Why, no, Michael, that's no coincidence at all. David in Tennessee noting, and just at this moment, George Will pens a column calling Alan Grayson the worst politician in America. Why? Because Alan Grayson spoke harshly of Count Dicula. There you go. So, we've come to the end of the first hour, and I promise my filibobstering is over. We're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we will go to your phone calls. Every last one of them. Light them up over there, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. And this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. And these are the Jackals.
Oh, Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, October 26, 2010.
It's bad. The latest numbers, I think, are about 3,015 people infected, over 200 dead.
Cholera outbreak in Haiti. Volcanoes and tsunamis in Indonesia. BP's oil still in the Gulf. Plus, the Obama administration moves forward on clean energy and fuel efficiency, but Republicans pledge even more obstruction.
Fancy that. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Well, this environmental movement is really anti-human.
And no one knows anti-humans better than you, Glenn Beck. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is sponsored by you. Yes, you. You help the Green News Report stay on your mainstream media public airwaves. We tell the truth, but can't do it without your help. Please stop by our website, greennews.bradblog.com, and hit that PayPal button to help contribute to our efforts. We rely on you. You can also PayPal to greennews@bradblog.com. Okay, Des, a lot of natural disasters leading the green news here today.
Oh, yes. Indonesia's most active volcano has begun erupting again, and scientists warned Monday that this time around, Mount Merapi could turn into a major eruption. This eruption is occurring just one day after a 7.7 earthquake in another part of the Indonesian island chain triggered a tsunami that killed 113 people, with hundreds still missing.
Yeah, and we're still getting more numbers from that. Is this the same area where we had that extraordinary tsunami 2 years ago?
Yes, the Indonesian island chain is an area where three different tectonic plates meet, so it's incredibly geologically active.
So the numbers of the dead could grow from that tsunami, unfortunately.
It's likely.
Yeah.
Over on the other side of the world, in Haiti, a fast-moving outbreak of cholera has killed nearly 300 people, the Haitian government said on Sunday, and sickened more than 3,000 in crowded refugee tent camps set up after the devastating earthquake 10 months ago. Actor Sean Penn just returned from Haiti and in a CNN interview described the difficulties in responding to the outbreak.
One of the things that people have to understand is say, well, don't use the water. The water is contaminated. The only way that people will pay attention to that is if clean water is provided. So whether that's through filtration systems or trucked in water, this is going to be the essential element. Water, water, water.
The earthquake in Haiti was a huge story until it was knocked off the front pages by the BP oil spill, and folks at the time had warned about the possibility of outbreaks such as this. And I'm afraid the story in Haiti is getting really absolutely no coverage. So kudos to Sean Penn, who has been spending months down there on the relief effort.
And speaking of the BP oil disaster in the Gulf, it's just a little over 6 months since the Deepwater Horizon rig exploded, killing 11 workers and leading to the worst oil spill in the nation's history. Louisiana fishermen reported on Friday they found miles-long strings of weathered oil floating toward Mississippi marshes, and marine scientists from Tulane University and Texas A&M say they've again found substantial amounts of oil on the seafloor just a few days after a federal official said government researchers have found no recoverable oil.
Incredible. Contrasting stories we continue to hear coming out of the Gulf.
And we didn't think it was possible to top BP's gaffe-prone old CEO Tony Hayward, but BP's new CEO, American Bob Dudley, is certainly giving it his all. Addressing a British lobbying group over the weekend, Dudley blamed the media for, quote, creating a climate of fear around the spill, and, quote,
You, Desi, you created a climate of fear.
Oh, and he also said, quote, that was a great rush to judgment before the full facts could possibly be known. And this is from the guy who purposely lowballed estimates of the size of the spill for weeks, even when internal BP research showed he knew otherwise. And by the way, he said those who said the rate was higher were scaremongering. Meanwhile, the Obama administration is moving forward with the first ever fuel efficiency standards for heavy trucks. The Environmental Protection Agency has announced new mileage standards and emission standards for big and medium-sized trucks like tractor trailers and cement mixers that will start in 2014. And at the same time, the Obama Interior Department announced approval of the largest solar power plant to be built on federal lands. This is the sixth major solar power project to gain approval in the last month.
And these are projects that have already been approved by Congress or that the president can approve unilaterally, correct?
Right, and that's part of his new strategy to pass energy and climate legislation in chunks in the face of Republican opposition. With the midterm elections next Tuesday, Republicans in Congress say they are confident they will take over Congress and block any future climate change legislation, including Senator James Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma, who famously calls global warming a hoax, who is practically giddy, saying Republicans
would take over the following seats where there are Democrat incumbents: Arkansas, Colorado, Florida, Illinois, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Washington State, Wisconsin, West Virginia, where I'll be Monday, North Dakota, and I think California. Now that's Barbara Boxer. We can win in Delaware, in Connecticut, certainly in Nevada.
Speaking of chunks, all of those folks are anti-climate change legislation. For more on that and the stories we didn't get to today, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
They're coming, they're running, ready to attack. The backstabbing, man grabbing. Don't turn your back on this pack.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine minutes past the hour, and let's get back to things rather quickly. Again, the lines are open at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on. I got a couple of blinking lights, and I'm going back to them just as quick as I possibly can. I love the things that get you guys going. I got an email in from Greg in sometime sunny San Diego. Congratulations on the fifth anniversary of the horn, says Greg. I thought I was going to barf when I heard the story of coal-fired pizza yesterday. Fresh pizza fired over dirty coal. How appetizing. Maybe after a coal-fired pizza I'll be ready for surfing in oil-soaked waters. Greg did some digging around. He says, a May 2009 story in pizzamarketplace.com, who knew? Well, but of course there is. May provide some insights and provides a link, and then a quote. There are dozens of internet discussion forums debating the merits of 1,000 degree heat and the proper amount of char for pizza crust. Millward, Really? Mill Ward? Attributes much of the interest in coal to celebrity chefs who got into the pizza business focusing on Pizza Napolitana or Naples-style pizza. Many of those chefs look to the history of pizza in North America for inspiration. Greg says, I somehow missed all those celebrity chefs cooking with coal. There's always been lots of talk about pizza in the Northeast, places like Lombardi's, Pepe's, Patsy's, and Grimaldi's, he said. Lombardi's was the first pizzeria in the United States, and it happened to be coal-fired. So for today's chefs, going forward was looking back. Coal is cantankerous. Well, be damned. I just thought it was toxic, but it's plum cantankerous. Coal is cantankerous, and it requires paying attention, Mill Ward said. Yes, Mill Ward. Great food hurts. Great food that's poison isn't food anymore. It's poison. Great. Then Greg says, great food tastes good, and it might even be good for you, but it doesn't hurt. It might be hot, spicy, sweet, sour, or lots of different things, but it doesn't hurt. And he notes, Greg also notes, he's following the governor's race in California. One last thing, Jerry Brown's ad people are good. The one comparing Arnold to E-Meg was great, but his latest reminding Nutmeg of who was governor when she said California was great might be even better. Meg was done last week. Now she's getting buried. Thanks, Greg. You know, I got to investigate this coal-fired pizza thing a little more deeply, but not so much. I'm hoping my favorite pizza place across the river doesn't go coal-fired. I don't think they will. They got better sense than that. But let's do. Quit the shilly-shallying, or not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey,
Susan.
Are you here? I know you're sitting down, but
I am.
Grab hold still. I had MSNBC on earlier while you were filibustering in the background. Do you know who Rand Paul is? Not Rand Paul. But do you know who the Republican spokespeople are blaming for this whole incident?
Move on.
No. Conway.
Well, of course they are.
I about fell out of the chair.
I'm surprised they haven't blamed Appius Claudius Polcare.
And as for, I have a message for dear old Mr. Prophet.
Yes.
You really, really don't need the spiffy black uniform to be a Nazi. All you need is a brown shirt. But I would suggest you pick up a history book, because if you do put on that brown shirt, you're going to have to take note of something called the Night of the Long Knives.
Well, it would appear that right now we're just at Kristallnacht.
Yeah, well.
But, yeah, we talked about the other night, June 30th, 1934.
Okay, anyway, got another little outrage for you. I'm sure you probably saw it. Tea Party, one of the major Tea Party organizations, wants to get rid of Congressman Keith Ellison.
Why? Yeah, I saw that. Because he's a Muslim.
A Muslim, yeah.
And he's provided support for Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To quote the United States Constitution, Article 6, Paragraph 3, there shall be no religious test for any office.
Well, that's just how them liberals read it.
Yeah. These guys only love the Constitution the way they want it written. It's this phantom Constitution that only they see. I really would like to get a copy. It would make interesting reading. Can you imagine the heights of paranoia that it goes into? It would be like walking around on the inside of Manson's mind. And I'm talking about Charlie's mind.
Yeah.
You know, just, yeah. Oh, and real quick, I could just went blank.
Happens to me all the time.
Yeah. I did want to tell Gene that I downloaded that app for the radio, and it works like a charm. Yay for Gene.
Well, News Ninja's got to stick together.
Yes, we do have to stick together, but that wasn't what I was going to say. CRS disease strikes again. Obviously, it couldn't have been that important, otherwise I'd remember it.
Well, it'll hit you as soon as you hang up, so.
Oh, yeah, I'm one of those people, I can't remember my kid's age without a calculator. I've got to look it up, you know, numbers and me.
I can't remember the date without one, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, I'm just, the brain's just, old age is just creeping. Or in my case, galloping. But I would really, really like to know what makes these people tick. But I agree definitely with your historical perspective.
Well, it's worth at least paying attention to, I think.
Because if we don't do something, we're headed for the same ash heap that the Romans ended up in.
Well, you know, you started off talking about the whole Keith Ellison thing. With the fact that they're calling for Keith. And the guy doing this is Judson Phillips. You know who Judson Phillips is, Susan? He is the Tennessee multimillionaire lawyer who put together that teabagging convention that Matt Osborne got run out of in Nashville, up there to the Gaylord Opryland Hotel.
In other words, he's a lawyer, so he certainly should know better.
Well, yes, among other things. Let's see. Teabagging Judson Phillips says, there are a lot of liberals who need to be retired this year, but there are few I can think of more deserving than Keith Ellison. Ellison is one of the most radical members of Congress. He has a zero rating from the American Conservative Union. He's the only Muslim member of Congress. He supports the Council for its American Islamic Relations, Hamas, and has helped Congress send millions of tax to terrorists in Gaza. You know, this guy's such a dumbass, he probably doesn't know the difference between Hamas and hummus.
Yeah, one you eat and one you
can't. You know, I think they serve hummus in the congressional cafeteria. That probably makes most of the little 20-something staffers the terrorist sympathizers.
Yeah, I just remembered what I was going to say.
Okay.
You were mentioning the dreadful toll that they're taking on us, their populi. Got another nominee for you.
Okie dokie.
Tiller.
Yeah.
Dr. Tiller.
Dr. Tiller.
And all of the other doctors who have been murdered for doing something completely legal. All in the name of life.
You got it. You know, this is just the Orwell machine. You know, H.G. Wells wrote The Time Machine, but George Orwell created a machine of his own. You just drop the nickel in and watch the right wingers go at it. And Orwellian is one of those words that's becoming meaningless.
Yeah, it's just.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Susan, thanks a million, dear.
These people cannot do this, but whatever.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Batten down the hatches.
Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans.
Yeah. Or it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Take care, Susan.
I'm bagging the kids.
Sure will. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
And that's News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. And by the way, in talking about, I'm glad that Susan's able to get the podcast and the live stream there on her iPad. I was notified by John Fox last night, and I checked it out for myself. Yes, Yes, if you have an Android operating system phone, and this is where the future, and it's important to mention this stuff, because this is where the future of radio is going. If you have an Android phone, and there's a lot of them out there now, it doesn't even have to be running 2.2, but if you've got an Android phone, you can go to the Android Marketplace, which is on your phone, and you can look for TuneIn Radio. So glad John found this. John's so good at this kind of stuff. We'd be lost without John Fox. TuneIn Radio. That's the name of it. It's a free download. And if you go, and I think it's talk, spoken word, then politics, and then progressive or something. But you'll find the Head On Radio Network. And it works like a charm. And the nice thing is you've got a choice of various and sundry different different bandwidths so that you can get like the 16 kbps stream, and most anything can run that. So the means by which internet radio can be gotten are expanding constantly. Isn't that cool? I think it is. Marty, with a note to Susan, not only were these murders committed in the name of life, Susan, but in the name of Jesus and Christianity. And that's why I want nothing to do with them. And I suspect Marty is similarly inclined. So let's keep going, and let's head to the phones. Chime in if you want to. You're welcome to dial right in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Jim.
Well, number one, lawyers do not necessarily know what's better. And as practitioners of the law, even if they know better, they don't exactly do better, do they?
Not always.
I mean, if you were to examine the Bonte Protocol, the one that was held in 20 January 1942 at Großbonzi, Berlin, of all the people who sat at that table and decided the final solution, only two were not lawyers. Heydrich and Eichmann. The rest of the people who sat around that table and enjoyed a nice buffet lunch were all lawyers. For example, Stuckart, the one who wrote the laws of race and resettlement and the laws defending purification of the blood, he was a lawyer. They all were lawyers. All those senior civil servants of the Third Reich at that particular meeting that decided the fate of 11 million people, with the exception of Heydrich, who chaired the meeting, and Eichmann, who served as his amanuensis, were lawyers.
And, you know, it's worth remembering in that vein, Jim, that the people who said that the Geneva Conventions are quaint in the Bush administration, the people who said that it was okay to engage in monumental and horrifying torture. The people who okayed the torture of children at Guantanamo, those were all lawyers too. And at least we did something, Jim. At least we did something about those lawyers who drafted that hateful business at Wannsee. But you know what? John Yoo still has a law license, and John Yoo is still teaching young legal minds at Bolt Hall in Berkeley, California.
Well, Fred Phelps is a licensed attorney.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean,
But the difference being that Fred Phelps did not act on behalf of the government. Fred Phelps is not and never has acted on behalf of we, the people of the United States. John Yoo did, and Jason Bibee did. And I think that, I think at least if you consider it in light of the Nuremberg Protocols, that that conveys a special sort of status on anyone who would do such a thing as the Bush administration lawyers did.
Well, lawyers basically have one particular function as far as I'm concerned. They basically can either enforce the law or they can bend it to their own will and to their own designs.
And, you know, it was probably over a year ago or more that our good friend Scott called in from Massachusetts, and we had a lengthy discussion on the difference between lawyering to apply the law and lawyering to figure out how to get around it. And that's the principal difference. The Bush administration was filled with people who wanted to creatively find a way to evade the law. It's illegal to break it. It is not necessarily illegal to evade it, or to corrupt it, or to twist it, or to pervert it. And that's what these right-wing lawyers do. And there is example after example after example of that happening. I remember during the Bush administration, when lawyers inside the Pentagon argued that, yes, law forbids them from doing direct data mining on American citizens, but, and you know, wow, who, what kind of person with a sense of any sort of ethics would come to this conclusion? Well, that's why the Bush lawyers were the Bush lawyers. They said, even, okay, so the law says that we can't actively data mine American citizens, but there's nothing in the law that says we can't hire someone to do it for us. And thus they did.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Finding a way to circumvent the law and to bend it, and if necessary, to find a way to break it without retribution. But that's the thing. You know, these people are schooled into law to the point that they are able to circumvent the spirit while pretending to observe the letter. Like I said before, sed lex dura lex. The law is simply latex.
It reminds me of Scott Fitzgerald's assertion to Hemingway that the rich are very different from you and me.
Of course. I mean, the rich can find advocates who will represent their causes, and the poor cannot afford them. But guess who's going to win when it comes to any type of legal confrontation? It's going to be the person who can afford a high-priced lawyer or a lawyer in their employ to achieve their ultimate goals. Just like I said in my email to you, I mean, it's the difference between the Eloy and the Morlocks and the time machine.
I saw that email, Jim. Why don't you expand on that just a little bit?
Well, the Eloy were the people who lived above ground, and the Morlocks were these rather unpleasant-looking beasts who lived underground and supported the Eloy, and from time to time would exact some type of retribution or some type of reward. They took the Eloy beneath the ground, and of course, the Morlocks, being cannibals, ate the Eloy. And that's exactly what's happening in society today, I really believe. You know, you have the Morlocks underground, the Eloy atop the ground, the Eloy who will not defend themselves or could not defend themselves, and the Morlocks who just sat there and ran their machines and at the designated time had the siren wail and inducted the Eloy above ground into their cannibalistic society.
It's a grim picture.
The struggle between good and evil, and the struggle between passivity and not being active in defending yourself. I mean...
So, and I should make clear, Jim, this incident in Kentucky is the one that has the spotlight, but it is by no means the only one. Another man in support of a Democratic candidate went to an event held by House Minority Whip Eric Cantor. You remember Eric Cantor. He's the guy who blew off significant House business so he could go to a Britney Spears concert in D.C. And so the guy shows up and just wants to ask, why won't you debate your opponent? And he was thrown to the ground and manhandled and arrested and beaten.
By thugs, right?
Bingo.
Where does the term thug come from?
The thuggy cult of India?
Precisely. And you know exactly what a time the British had in dealing with them. I mean, these people, the thugs or thuggies, they made a practice of using extraordinary means to achieve their ends, which weren't very pleasant.
They favored garroting, did they not?
The garrote, yes, exactly. That's one of their specialties. And they worshipped a goddess named Kali. Now, I'm not trying to get to Harrison Ford or...
That's okay. As long as you don't get to the monkey brains, we'll be all right.
That's fine. But, I mean, I'm not trying to go there. But that's exactly, you know, that was based upon history. The Thuggee Society. It gave the British colonial rulers one hell of a time to...
Well, what was the assassin cult? And I'm not talking about the Hashashins, but there was an assassin cult in Jerusalem that gave the Romans absolute fits. The Jewish zealots would dress up as women and assassinate passing Romans. Oh, what was their name?
I can't remember. I'm sorry, but nonetheless. These were people who took extraordinary means, taking the law into their own hands and, you know, doing whatever they could to eliminate or at least to make the lives of their masters or rulers or governors very, very unpleasant. And how in the name of God can someone get their head stomped in a street without some type of legal retribution being readily at hand?
Well, and again, this thug in Kentucky, or this pair of thugs, a summons has been issued. And again, a summons, I mean, if you get pulled over for speeding, the traffic ticket that you receive is a summons. That's how this is being handled in Kentucky. Not a warrant for arrest, but a summons.
Well, I mean, this is exactly the same thing that happened when the SA was in control of the streets of Germany after the days of the Weimar Republic. And these are the types of people who propelled Adolf Hitler into power until Hitler decided that, well, they were going to have a second revolution and maybe take him out. And he had to react against them in the Night of the Long Knives, previously mentioned by Susan. But I mean, what is the difference? Because our streets, if these people don't have their way, are going to be used as means of conveyance to crush any opposition relentlessly. And if they get summoned, they're going to get a slap on the wrist or some type of admonition by the so-called lawyers and the people's in charge of the judiciary, just the way that Hitler did when he first tried his putsch in 1923. I mean, Hitler was supposed to do 5 years. He did less than 9 months because the courts were on his side. And I'm afraid that our legal structure is, as it stands now, somewhat akin to those people who allowed Adolf Hitler to walk free from Landsberg prison. And what did Hitler do? He said, well, we can't do it by street fighting, but we can use the state, and we can use so-called quasi-legal means to achieve our goals. And that's precisely what he did. How did he become pure? He simply used the Reichstag and used the legal mechanism at hand in post-Weimar Germany to combine the title of Chancellor and Minister President after the death of von Hindenburg in 1934 into one office, Führer or leader, and the people followed him. And I'm afraid this is a case of history repeating itself. As I've said before, history is not linear, it is cyclical. And in this country, I envision any societal fabric that we have that maintains a sense of decorum and decency being rent in twain, like the temple veil of Easter. And it cannot be restored without drastic and unusual means.
And I think that's the inquiry, Jim. Can it be restored? Because history suggests that it can't. By the way, News Ninja Gene, who reads the internet every day, the whole thing, reminded me of the word. The assassins in ancient Jerusalem were the Sicarii, because that's Latin for dagger men.
That's right.
And they would dress as women and go among Romans and, you know, slip the shiv to them.
Yeah, Judea, unfortunately, was not exactly a very easy province to govern. And as I've said before in this program, to be appointed by Caesar as the procurator of Judea or his consul in that particular part of the world, well, it was not exactly a very good assignment, now was it?
Well, they preferred for the longest time to let them have some level of internal rule. That's how Antipater and his son Herod and Herod Antipas, and it's only after the uprising that they get enfolded into the province created called Palestina, and then the northern areas are enfolded into the Roman province of Syria, so as to sort of dilute the problem.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But which was it, Herod the Great, or was it his son? The one who built Caesarea in honor of Caesar Augustus.
Right.
Well, you got to admit, it was one hell of a...
Well, he built the temple, too.
Exactly. Caesarea was one of the most beautiful cities in that part of the world. Had one of the finest harbors. They used concrete and everything. They're still finding the concrete foundations that embrace the harbor. And, you know, Rome was a civilizing influence for those people. The Roman Empire was. I mean, basically the Roman Empire itself was a means of doing great things and establishing a civilized world. Now, I didn't agree with their methods of enjoying themselves at the Colosseum. No, I can't understand that. When people who could develop the arch, concrete, roads, law, things of that nature, would then again enjoy an afternoon's delight at seeing animals killed and people burned and gladiators fighting to the death. To me, that's something that I can't get my head around. But to a certain extent, Rome was the civilizing influence. And when it fell, the Dark Ages ensued. And one thing I will have to give the church credit for, and you may disagree with this, and we have agreed to disagree before, one of the main repositories of any remnant of civilization during the Dark Ages were the monasteries and the enclaves of some type of civilization.
Well, without a doubt, and primarily Ireland.
Everywhere, Bob. I mean, everywhere. I mean, throughout Europe. I mean, in Roman Britain. I mean, when Roman Britain fell, It was total chaos. I mean, even the words that survived from that period of time in Roman Britain were just words that referred basically to very basic things, the barnyard, things of that nature. The same thing happened in Gaul and the other, you know, provinces that were overrun by the barbarians, the Goths, Visigoths, the Huns, and all those other people who just wanted to dispute Roman law. And, you know, when the legions were strong, civilized society completely collapsed. I mean, I realized that Roman law and Roman culture and Roman civilization to a certain extent and to a great extent was upheld by spears and the Roman army. But unfortunately, it was not a very good time to live after 476 A.D. when the empire collapsed in the West.
And, you know, it's interesting. I was doing some reading on the falling into the ruin of the Roman Forum, Fora, because there were, by the time of the fall, there are a number of them. And this is probably not the place to discuss the entire collapse, and it's not quite as simple as Gibbon makes out. But the Roman Fora, including the Republic era, the Forum of Diocletian, the Forum of Augustus, they were all there hard by each other. They were being plundered, and grapes were being grown in them by something like the 6th century A.D. or C.E.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that tells us something. That tells you how quick something can fall apart. The latest remaining piece, I think, in the Forum is a pillar that was erected by an emperor who was so unnoteworthy as to make it impossible to tell why he would have erected that pillar in the first place. And I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that civilization goes away quick. Civilization is a very, very fragile thing, and the fact that we have flat panel TVs, and yes, radio and TV over the internet, may tend to lull us into a sense that,
a false security.
Very false. Because it all, I mean, whether it be the Roman Empire, or just about any other, empire that has ever fallen into ruin, they have all hung on threads. You know, yes, some knowledge was preserved by the church, largely transmitted by virtue of having been previously preserved by the Arabs. But the stuff that was lost, I mean, my God, Jim, I don't think we don't have 1%, not 1% of the holdings inside the library and museum of Alexandria were preserved. People like Galen, who learned his craft as a battlefield physician, it took 1,000 years to recover what they knew about medicine.
Exactly.
And we've had monumental strides forward in medicine, and yet by the same token, most people don't have access to it.
Well, Galen, Paracelsus, others as well. But, you know, it just shows to show you how tenuous our grasp is upon civilized society.
And that's why I tend to give more weight to things like this act of thuggery in Kentucky last night than perhaps others do. Because these are signposts to the ends of things.
Well, I think they are, too. And the people, if they do this, and if they're so determined, that's going to be my way or the highway.
And see, I don't want to be mistaken for being some sort of millennialist that, you know, that this is a, there's no such thing as the end times, Jim.
No, I don't know about that. I think the world is changing, and it's not changing to the betterment of mankind, Bob. I'll be honest with you. I mean,
well, we may exterminate ourselves.
Well, I'm talking about other forces than that, too. I mean, I think the Earth is changing. Things that are totally and completely beyond our control. And, you know, I am not one to dispute 2012, December 21st. and I am not disputing how things change. I mean, I believe the Mayas and other people, they knew some things, speaking about lost knowledge. I mean, the Spaniards destroyed all the codices of the Maya except two. And those, of course, were called the Dresden Codex. And I believe that the Earth's crust and within, there are certain physical forces that work within the Earth that are going through a cyclical sign over which we have no control, period. You like it or not, but that's just my particular opinion. I hope I'm wrong. I hope December 21st will be another winter solstice.
Well, I tend to look at those Mayan calendrics, among other things, as mathematical exercises, because the Mayans had and the subsequent cultures that followed them, the Mexica and the Tezcatl and the Toltecatl and et cetera. The Toltecatl were earlier. But anyway, those were mathematical exercises. That's what happens when you learn to multiply and have a zero. You know, can you imagine, the Romans calculated the worth of Marcus Licinius Crassus at something like 200 million sesterces or something like that. Can you imagine writing 200 million without a zero?
No, I can't.
Well, they had to.
No, I can't, but, you know, I see where you're coming from, but I still believe that our planet is undergoing a number of changes and shifts over which we have no control.
Oh, that's the absolute truth. I mean, that's the nature of plate tectonics. That's the nature of siltation of river valleys. It's because the planet is a living, breathing organism of a sort.
I mean, look at how much it's changed. At one time, there was a huge mass supercontinent named Pangaea.
Right.
All that broke apart. And it did so, I'm sure, with the people who were living on that particular part of the world weren't real happy about it. There was nothing they could do about it.
Well, what you get with the Mayan calendar is the fact that they had three calendars. They had a sacred calendar, a secular calendar, and a third one, and I forget what you call it. And I'll bet our buddy John in upstate New York could help with this. But the reason you come up with these cycles, there's multiple cycles. There's 5,000-year cycles, 50,000-year cycles, 500-year cycles. Well, all because of the interlocking. Or if you think of all these three calendars as cogs, just click, 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 and sooner or later they'll all hit zero on the same spot.
Well, there were I think one was called Cantoon, but I can't remember the other two. But nonetheless, I mean, I just in my own mind's eye cannot discount what's going to happen very soon.
Well, and for my part, the nice thing from my perspective is if something monumental goes down on December the 12th or 21st or 24th, 2012, I'll go, well, son of a gun, I was wrong.
Well,
and I don't have any problem doing that.
Don't think you'd have any other choice, though, would you?
Right, but then there's the other thing about these calendars, and that is that we are contemplating them in line with the European calendar. And there's every possibility in the world that December the 21st, 2012, happened about 5 years ago.
I don't know about that, Bob. But all I know is that, you know, these...
Yeah, but, you know, without a doubt, a great big burp from some Krakatoa to be named later, life changes.
It does. Like I say, it's physical. It's always in a state of flux.
You know, consider that. You know, the ancient Greeks gave us the mythology, the mythos that includes, you know, cyclopses and satyrs and centaurs and these giant monster creatures that are talked about in the Homeric epics, right?
You mean the Titans?
Well, and the Titans, and the reason they did that is because they lived in a time when, A, people were relatively scant upon the planet, and, B, This is before there had been a great deal. You know, this is the first rising of civilization, so nobody's really dug around a whole bunch. And the next thing you know, they're digging around in the dirt, and they're hauling out a thigh bone, or what looks to them to be a thigh bone, and the damn thing's 8 feet long.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Now, if you are of an inquiring mind like the ancient Achaeans, and if you have no better explanation, you do kind of the same thing that we do today, and that is you try to put a body around the bone, only using their understanding of the natural world, coupled with their own mythology. You get winged horses and cyclopses and, you know, all kinds of giant creepy things, griffins and dragons. And I mean, we know, for instance, that the Chinese mythology of the dragon comes from the excavation of dinosaur bones. I mean, that's known.
Well, that's just a natural thing with men and humanity.
Yeah, it's a natural function of human curiosity.
Exactly. But you know, the things of what I'm talking about, we're exploring the natural curiosity, Bob. I do believe that this Earth, this planet of ours, is in a constant state of flux, and I don't think the world as we know it today is going to continue for a very much longer period of time. I really don't think so.
And I worry about... maybe that's the wrong word. But I contemplate that as well, Jim, and I think about the fact that we know so much of what we know of cultures that are only... 2,000 or 2,500 years old, because they literally carved in stone. We don't carve in stone a lot.
Well, the thing I'm trying to, this is what I'm trying to say, and I'm going to get off here. I mean, for example, our geologists, our seismologists are talking about, for example, San Francisco, the Bay Area, the Hayward Fault, and all these other faults that run through it. There are so many other faults than just the Hayward Fault and the San Andreas Fault. They're not saying not if, but when.
Sure.
Or Yellowstone.
Yeah, that's another when.
When. And when you think of the effects that disruptions in those areas of our own country, if that should occur, it will change life as we know it. And we will have the Great Lakes flowing into the Gulf of Mexico. Ain't nothing we can do about it, buddy. Sorry. And I believe it's going to happen. It's simply a matter of plate tectonics. It could be a matter of emanations of energy from the sun.
And some of those things it is absolutely impossible, Jim, to prepare for.
Exactly. There's nothing we can do about that. And it appears as though... And what I'm trying to say is that people are getting to the point that they seem to have lost any sense of control on their own destiny. And when that happens, you have these groups that we've been talking about, the teabaggers or whomever. Well, you know, they're going to influence people, and they're going to do all kinds of things with that type of sense of foreboding to create what I consider to be rather unfortunate and undesirable end. I may not be making a lot of sense to a lot of people.
No, you make plenty of good sense. The question is, how do we deal with it existentially?
I don't know, Bob. I don't have the answer to that.
I mean, I don't know if you're not too far from where I am. I don't know if you guys had a tornado watch this evening, but we did.
Sure did.
And... here in the hills, those things are kind of rare because it's one of the few advantages of living here. Nowhere for a tornado to sit down. But all you can do when you see that...
A tornado can sit down anywhere it damn well pleases. Do you know it? Not know it. It's just a matter of wind patterns and shift patterns and meteorological...
But they like flat ground a lot better than they like hilltops. In other words, when they sit down here, they tend to jump hilltop to hilltop, because they can't just put down and run. You can't sit there and go, well, what are we going to do?
No, can't.
Okay. And having grown up in Tornado Alley, in northwest Alabama, you know, we just learned to listen for the siren. And when the siren came, you got in the bathtub and pulled the mattress over you.
That's basically all you can do. That's basically all you can do, really.
Although after a couple of nasty ones, I knew a lot of people who built storm shelters. And those are basic, and there was a big business in doing it for a while. And essentially, those same concrete tanks that get used as septic tanks, well, they're perfectly clean when they're empty. And you put a trap door in the top and a ladder in, and guess what? It's a storm shelter.
Yeah, I know.
Put in a couple of flashlights, some fresh batteries. Oh, you know, maybe the bottle of your favorite elixir and a little Coleman lantern, and well, there you go.
That's about all you can do. I don't know. It just seems as though we are losing control of our own destiny and our own means of preserving what civilization we have. Hence, I've used the word tenuous. And that's about all I can say. And I hope you have a good program tonight. And maybe things will be a lot better than what I have not predicted but have thought about.
I got it. Thank you, Jim. Have a good night.
And same to you, sir.
Bye now. About 3 minutes before the hour, we'll take a quick break and come back with the final hour of the program. If you're on hold, please stay that way. Or if you want to get in line and be part of the conversation, you're welcome to do that, too. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333 on your own nickel if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid @gmail.com. Hey, it's just a dugout that my dad built. This is the horn.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Here indeed. Almost 4 minutes past the hour, almost 4 minutes into the final hour of the program, as B-Rez noted there just a matter of seconds ago. And I was just checking the email, and I got there's one that just came from Truth Out. We made our goal, our friend Maya Shenwar, noting on behalf of the staff of Truth Out, we'd like to thank all of our donors and well-wishers from this month. With dozens of donations coming in Monday evening, we were just able to make our goal. So it can happen for liberal media. It can happen. And hopefully we'll be able to say the same thing sometime before October the 31st, which, by the way, falls on a Sunday. So that means we've only got today, tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday to do it. And we're about, since the last time I said it, about $415 away from making the goal for the month of October. And you know what? Doing it $10 at a time is fine if you're able. Don't think that there's such a thing as too small a contribution. There isn't. It all matters. Every last bit of it matters. Let's see. A bunch of blinking lights here. I hope there's still people. Let's find out. Hey, welcome to the program,
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. Couple of things. One, my dad was an attorney his entire life, adult life. And he always told me that being an attorney was primarily to protect the little guy against the system. And that's what he did his entire life.
That is more than admirable. Then there are great ones who do that.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, when I went back to Vojvodina, the part of Yugoslavia he was from, I actually had an old farmer come up to me and grasp my hand and say, "You're so-and-so's son, aren't you?" "Yes, I am." "Thank you. Thank your father. I wouldn't have my farm if it wasn't for him." So he's been
That Atticus Finch stuff.
Yeah. You know, you do this kind of thing. You do it because it's the right thing to do. You do not sit there and, like, that thing, John Yoo, and torture the law until it gives you the answer you want. You know, that's where we have a problem. Because these people do, they torture the law until it gives them the answer they want.
Yeah, we had 8 years of the Bush administration in which they waterboarded the Constitution itself.
Correct.
Hoping all that pesky ink about habeas corpus would just sort of go away.
And this administration has not closed down all of their horrendous violations, if you will. And, you know, with the stomping of that woman in Kentucky, that so much reminded me of the clinic defenses that we went to. It wasn't us that started the contretemps. We were putting our bodies in between the women and those idiots. And we were the ones that were being beaten on, not the other way around. Of course, once they started beating on our people, I took a rather dim view of it, and they didn't like that. I actually was threatened one time with this idiot from Operation Rescue saying he was willing to call out the police. I said, please do. I will have you booked for assault. Because the woman we were trying to shield to get into the clinic was being beaten on by these idiots. They have no morals, Bob. They have no morals at all. I don't care what they say about they're being pro-life and God knows what else. They're full of crap. Simple as that.
You know, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, Cossack, but I think they are more than just a piece of crap.
Oh, I agree.
They're heavily armed pieces of crap. They are heavily armed, poorly educated pieces of crap. They're heavily armed, poorly educated, violently inclined pieces of crap. But yeah, at the end of the day, a piece of crap.
Yeah. Well, my brother has issued an invitation to any of these idiots that would like to. They're welcome to assault the house anytime they'd like to. Unfortunately, the house is guarded by two guys who actually know how to use them and have firearms at their disposal and will use them.
Mostly bullies oddly don't like enough, to do that.
No. Oddly enough, none of them have taken us up on the offer.
And in that same vein, I'm going to ask a question, and I hope no one will think that I'm a patent horse's ass for asking it. But with regard to the thuggery that went down last night in Kentucky, and I realize I'm on shifting sands in asking this, but what is the point in the stuntery that wound up with this woman getting hurt?
I don't know.
I'm not asking for you to agree with me, Cossack. In fact, disagree with me. Say what you mean, what you feel. You know, because this ain't right wing radio. This ain't the choir.
I found myself
asking questions about it. That makes me. Isn't this? We know, do we not, that they are vibrating like a hammered gong right now, the right wingers. They're saying all kinds of crazy stuff to try to intimidate us into not voting and to try to make sure that we understand that we are to fear them above all. That they don't want to be Americans with us, they want to be the only Americans.
Correct.
So, it sickens me when thugs behave like thugs. But we know they're thugs, right?
Yeah.
Was there anything heroic in going down there to do this little piece of political theater and deliver him a certificate as Kentucky's number one member of the corporatocracy or whatever it was? What did it accomplish? What was it for, Cossack? And I'm asking this sincerely. I'm not, because I mean I'm part of a movement or a gathering of human beings who go and protest and make our voices heard fairly regularly. But we don't just show up and try to hand a certificate to Don Blankenship. Because he will have you shot.
Correct.
We save our energies for places where it matters. Now, this is getting a lot of publicity, but as Corey noted when he wrote in from Louisville, this isn't going to take votes away from Rand Paul. It's going to get Rand Paul votes. Because, once again, does Move On understand the Southern mindset? By God, Yankee, come down here and we showed her, by Jeebus. She won't do that again, I don't reckon. Don't be coming down here, Kentucky, trying to foist your filthy liberal ways on us, by God. We'll slam your head to the concrete and knock some damn teeth out next time, girlie. And you know, you live in the redneck part of Florida.
Oh, I do. Unfortunately, I do.
But you know the mindset.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten into near fist fights over the fact that I suggested that, if we're going to indulge in this idiocy of, well, I'm going to lower taxes, fine. Why don't you just abolish taxes altogether? Suddenly you hear nothing. You hear crickets.
Yeah, because see, they don't like that reductio ad absurdum business. Because it proves them to be the absurdam part of reductio ad absurdum.
Exactly. I mean, if you abolish taxes, then you take in zero revenue. With zero revenue, your roads don't get rebuilt. They don't get resurfaced.
But these fools have been conned, Cossack, into thinking that that's a good thing. They don't want paved roads. They don't want drinkable water. Unless a good, upstanding, God-fearing corporation can deliver it to me in the private sector. Am I wrong?
Drive me insane. No, you're correct. You're absolutely correct.
I mean, do you see, and this is just the kind of navel gazing that I engage in, mind you. But what was the purpose? What was the purpose of what led to that fracas last night?
Well, you don't get a lot of mileage out of waving a red flag in front of an enraged bull.
You know, there's a big difference between, say, my dear friend and colleague Judy Bonds, who is very, very sick, very ill. There's a big difference between Judy sitting peacefully in a nonviolent demonstration in which a coal thug crosses the line to punch her in the head.
Correct.
That is wildly different from taking your little phony baloney certificate and trying to put it into the hands of Rand Paul.
Correct.
I don't want to be thought of as condoning. I do not. But what did she expect?
All these idiots were going to jump her. I mean, that's kind of obvious.
I mean, we know now from Corey's note that she was threatened and intimidated beforehand. We may have to take somebody out. Honey, these are rednecks. Angry, violent, pig ignorant rednecks. They are not kidding.
No, they're not. Do you remember that episode of Top Gear a couple of years back where they tried to caravan from Florida to New Orleans with their cars sporting all kinds of inflammatory in the South epitaphs spray painted on the side of their cars? Did you see that?
No, I didn't, but I can only imagine the outcome.
They were taking pictures of people passing them on the road, threatening to blow their heads off. They were threatened numerous times. They had to pull off into a service station and wash that stuff off the sides of their cars because they were in serious probability of being blown away before they ever got anywhere near New Orleans. These people are crazy down here. They're insane. The war between the states has not been finished in their minds.
You know, there's a. I think you're probably familiar with John Sayles' great movie, Mate One.
Yes.
There's a line in there where the union organizer is on the train and he's headed for Mate One, and the fellow says, the one fellow on the train says to the organizer, "Mister, where are you going?" He says, "Headed to Mate One." He says, "You don't want to go there, Mister. Them people's crazy."
Well, yeah, in a manner of speaking. They dare stand up to the cold.
I mean, I guess I'm questioning tactics here, Cossack, because there is a difference between walking across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in the name of civil rights and equal treatment for everyone born American, and right. deliberately courting trouble for the sake of courting trouble.
And you know who Edmund Pettus
I bet I'm pissing people off right now, and I don't mean to be.
Oh, no. You know who Edmund Pettus was?
Yes.
Very nice man. Not.
Well, they didn't name bridges after nice people in Alabama back then.
No. And, you know, Pettus was a violent SOB.
Yeah.
Murderous.
I mean, the South has not changed that much.
No, it hasn't. No, it hasn't. And they tend to forget that the vast majority of the wonderful infrastructure they experienced was brought to them by whom?
Yankees.
Democrats.
Yankees and Democrats.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. Hey, Cossack, I got to run on, brother, because we got to stack. But it's good to hear from you. And
all right.
Thanks for putting up with my little thesis there. I hope I didn't put you off or anybody else. And I'm not trying to in any way denigrate or downplay the seriousness of the thuggery. But Jesus Christ.
What do they expect?
You know, I don't know. I guess that's part of me being a redneck too. Pick your battles.
Exactly.
All right, Cossack, you have a good night, brother.
All right, you too, Bob. Take care.
Later. That's the Cossack who calls from North Florida. And you know, I welcome a little dialogue on this. I'm going right back to the phones, but can we have a little drive-by truckers moment real quick? Yeah, this. God, I love this intro. And, you know, I'm not trying to make anybody mad. I'm trying to offer a little bit of common sense. If you've got a rabid dog coming down the road, you don't go up to the rabid dog and try to get it, give it a certificate. Rand Paul's followers descended upon the state capital of Kentucky earlier this year, armed to the goddamn teeth, with no threat in sight. They're gonna kill somebody! Because they're ignorant, armed, and angry. And you're not going to make anything any better by needling them. Maybe it's funny in D.C. It's a goddamn death wish in Kentucky. You know, it's real cute in Blazing Saddles, when Cleavon Little lifts his Klan hood up and says, "Where the white women at?" But if you do that at a real Klan rally, you will wind up in a goddamn river with chains wrapped around you. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, they did it to a teenage African-American boy for just looking at a white woman. That much has not changed. Kate writing in. She says, "I'm glad you brought this up. I thought this incident was precipitated by cultural ignorance and political naivete. A sick and rabid animal will attack when it is frightened. I don't condone the violence, but I understand why it happened." Kate says, "Be wise in choosing the hill you want to die on. Chaos is always self-correcting." And she adds as a P.S., "Thanks for the most excellent music tonight in the history seminar." News Ninja Gene says, "Do you think she wanted martyrdom?" Perhaps she wanted to help put an end to the Union because she thought it was not worth saving. I know sometimes, no offense, that I think the South might be better off on its own. If the wingnuts got their wish, wouldn't the South finally grow its own left? No, they would slaughter them in their beds, Gene. They would slaughter them in their beds. And for anyone who thinks I'm engaging in hyperbole, I am not. You know, political theater is great in its place, but political theater is not a substitute for activism. And that wasn't activism as far as I can tell. It's one thing to stand outside the theater and handbill folks. And you know what? If the other side comes up and gets violent, well, it's to be expected. And, you know, I'm hearing from people who have lived or passed through the South. And they're interesting responses. Our buddy David in South Carolina: "No bumper stickers here. It's not safe to have the wrong bumper stickers or yard signs up around here in South Carolina. I am serious. I know. I had an Obama sign in our yard. My children got called nigger lover on the bus. And I got nails thrown in my driveway. And I don't shrink from the struggle. I'm not afraid. But by the same token, like I said, I also don't go down and find Don Blankenship and just say, 'Here, I wanted to present you with a certificate for being the biggest horse's ass in 2,000 years of Western civilization.' Because he's got armed thugs who will shoot you. There is a world of difference between, for instance, this incident in Kentucky and the incident where the journalist asked a question of Joe Miller and was taken down by members of the active duty military who were moonlighting as thugs. There's all the difference in the world. There's a difference between the guy, and Dave Nywert wrote about him at Crooks and Liars, and you should go and see it. A guy asks, goes to an Eric Cantor event to ask why he won't debate his opponent. That's legitimate. Do you see the distinction between this and a piece of political theater? This is an amazing piece of video shot with a cell phone. And it shows a member of the actual law enforcement. Two members, armed to the teeth, taking down a citizen for doing no more than asking a question. Yeah, there's audio. Let's see if it's... Yeah. They're wrestling him against a car.
Stop resisting. Stop resisting. You're very free.
Put your hands behind.
Dad?
Do it.
Do you hear that? This is his son recording the video. Dad? And two cops saying, put your hands behind your back or you're going to get sprayed. And did you hear what happened in the crowd in the background? Do it! Do it! Now, this is not the belly of the beast somewhere in Kentucky. This is nice, upscale, suburban Northern Virginia.
Do it!
Stop resisting. It's not illegal arrest.
Yes, it is an illegal arrest. Guys...
Third guy, big fat guy enters. Again, armed to the teeth.
He can't if you're holding him.
Oh, maybe that's his daughter. Now the fat guy pile drives him into the pavement.
Just fucked up my arm. I can't believe you guys did that.
You have to stop resisting.
What, how was I resisting?
Put your hands behind your back.
Sir, get this on camera and give them a butt head.
Oh. Sir, you have no right to block my camera.
Excuse me. You have no right to cuss.
Come on. I have no right to cuss at you. I never cussed.
You know that? You have no right to cuss at me.
Twisted the fuck out of my arm. Sir, you're going to want to talk to me? Hey, that's not a nice way to talk. Hey, guys.
That's not a nice way to talk. And then the big fat cop who pile drove him to the ground shows up to block the picture. Do you understand when I say that what went on in Kentucky trivializes stuff like this and what happened in Alaska? And I swear, I'm going to be really pissed off. I'm going to be really pissed off when I get that fundraising appeal from Move On. Dear Bob, can you send us $5 so we can put an ad about this in the Washington Post? Really? If you get it before I do, please forward it to me, because you know you will. Cindy in the Great Northwest. What happens out west or up north when rednecks parade into town? Not a damn thing. People let them enjoy themselves. Unless they're white supremacists or that jackass preacher of hate, they get run out of town by picketers. I keep trying to explain. It is a different world. It is a different country in the South. Kevin's in Seoul, South Korea, and he writes, "Dear Bob, here's to the Southern gentleman. Do rednecks piss standing up? Any man that feels they have to beat up middle-aged women, children, and the weak, there's got to be some serious male inadequacy problems. No wonder they have to carry guns." I guess when you're lacking naturally, you have to compensate by other means. And it's true. The whole history of Southern white male violence can be found in downright Freudian concepts of sexual inadequacy. Terrified that the black man is going to take their white women. And nasty little epithets that have grown up over the decades and the centuries about, you know. I have praised from one end of the one end of the block to the other, Southern liberals. Because, you know, even though in South Carolina, where David says it's not safe to have the wrong bumper sticker, David still stands up. In Alabama, Matt Osborne goes takes that video camera and goes and puts it in people's faces, knowing what it can mean to him. All over the place. All over the place. Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia. Jesus Christ! Mike Malloy is on the air coming out of Georgia. And Mike's no shrinking violet, and neither's Kathy. And they do what they do every night, and they do not hide who they are or what they are. Mike packs heat. Mike was advised to pack heat. But there's a big difference between doing that and courting trouble for the sake of trouble. Spike writes in and says, not safe being blue in the South. Good point, Bob. I had to keep taking my Sestak stickers off my car window when I would go to spend weekends with a girl in Lynchburg, Virginia. She got bothered by coworkers about being with a baby killer. Because the sticker said Joe Sestak, Democrat for Senate. It wasn't even a race from their goddamn state. She no longer works at that job either. And our thing ended not because she had issues with my politics. She surprisingly agreed with me mostly. It was because she became embarrassed her friends and family thought so little of me just for that. The cycle just keeps spinning. Don't hunker down. Don't hide. But Jesus, don't go pet the rabid dog. Fido doesn't love you. Fido is rabid. You get it? Please. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I was wondering about if that was condoned by... Move on, or was she doing that just on her own?
She has been routinely identified as a Move On activist.
Yeah, I realize that, but I wondered, I mean, because I was like you, I was wondering, what was the point, you know? And when she got up, she was holding on to that sign, and it made her look like she was supporting Rand Paul, because that's what the sign said. His name was in big letters. But beside the point, I think the girl nearly got killed if it weren't for somebody saying, don't do that.
Well, no. You know what really saved her? I don't think she'd have a tooth in her head right now, Juanita, if it hadn't been for her wig.
Well, that probably to begin with, but that guy was ready to stomp her some more.
But when they grabbed her to take her down, and you know this, you you live there too.
Yeah.
When a redneck grabs you to take you down, he grabs your hair, and he wants to slam your face into the curb.
Yeah.
And that can be a killing blow. And well, if he grabbed her hair, and came away with a wig in his hand. If that had been her hair.
Yeah.
She might be dead.
Well, if he'd have kicked her again and kicked her in the right way, he could have either crippled her for life or he could have killed her just one more blow to the back of her neck. And I don't know how they could say it was her shoulder because I saw the thing and it was definitely the back of her neck. But like I think Kate said it so eloquently, you know, choose your battles. The way I at what she said now, but it was, I'm not that brilliant.
But they really, I mean, they
express it like that.
This gang of political and social and cultural thugs, Juanita, really is dangerous. I just saw a story a few minutes ago. NPR, National Public Radio in D.C.?
Uh-huh.
They got a bomb threat after the Ron Williams firing.
Well, you know, I think they think they're in, I think they've been, what you call it, encouraged by all these people such as Glenn Beck, and they think this is their time and they're going to make the most of it. And maybe they're right, you know. But I didn't understand what the point of what she was doing. I didn't understand, you know. I think, what good was it to risk your life like that? And maybe she didn't know she was risking her life. But somebody should have known.
Well, that's the if she didn't know, somebody needs to wise up. Non-Southern liberals who want to come down and needle the rednecks, that it is dangerous. It is
not
healthy. It can be hazardous to your life.
Right. Not just your health, but your life, But, it was really something to see. But, like you said, whose mind's it going to change?
You know, when the Freedom Riders came south, you know, they didn't go and poke the Klansmen in the chest. They went about their business of simply trying to register people to vote, and they were killed for it.
Oh yeah, but she came close to being killed, or crippled for life. I mean,
okay, so
she
you're
really came
so
close.
So you're okay with what I said?
Of course, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think what they did was right at all. I'm talking about the.
No, the thugs, but
taking up for them.
You know, there shouldn't have been a criminal summons issued. There should have been a felony warrant issued for attempted murder.
If it was one of us, we'd have been knocked out and arrested.
We'd have been treated like that.
Spot.
We'd have been treated like that guy in Virginia was treated. That audio that I just played.
Absolutely.
Three big fat tub of guts cops would have taken us to the ground, maybe broken an arm. Lost teeth, who knows what? You were resisting.
We had down here, this has been a while back, this is just one thing, but they had took this guy in. He was not a quadriplegic, but a paraplegic. You know, had use of his arms. And he was driving, and they stopped him for some violation pertaining to his driving. And they took him into the police department. Over this is in Tampa. And this was on film in the police department. They kept telling him to get out of the chair. And he said, I can't. I'm crippled.
I remember that.
And they dumped him out of that wheelchair. Dumped him on the floor. I mean, right in front of the camera and everybody. And that wasn't the only time something like that happened. But I thought, wow.
Yeah. And you know, Sandra just dropped a note in, Juanita.
Yeah.
And she said also, and most importantly, there's an N-word in the White House. See, I don't think that Ms. Valle, I don't think she understood that people, these racist, bigoted, prejudiced, the antediluvian freaks, normal people don't understand that they are white, hot, angry over the simple presence of a man of darker skin in the White House.
And absolutely. That's it.
And they will take it out. They will take it out on anyone that they deem to be supportive of it.
That is number one. That is the number one reason. The number one. In my opinion, that's absolutely correct. And nothing else. And then you got the churches. Oh, this guy, you know, he's going to ruin everything. You remember, but my right-wing friend, you know, she hasn't spoken to me since then because she didn't want us discussing politics. and although I said what I believed, but I didn't, I tried not to, but she would give these little slurs. Well, one thing that she did, she called after he was elected. She said, he's just going to ruin everything. And I just erupted, you know. I said, we had a monster in there for 8 years. I said, Bush is, could be the Antichrist. You know, he is an Antichrist. And I said, and Sarah Palin doesn't know the truth, wouldn't tell the truth if it hit her over the head. And she, that was it. I couldn't say what I wanted to say.
Oh, no.
So she could put these little digs in, and I just had it. And my son asked me the other day, did he think we would make up? And I said, no, you know, I've come to believe that this is the best thing, you know, for us to part.
Well, indeed. You know, our conversations get other people going. Kate just wrote in, you know, she's way out west in Montana now. And she said, it's starting to feel unsafe to voice opinions here, too.
Yeah.
No bumper stickers except for the faded Obama stickers.
Well, those are everywhere.
She says, but there's a noticeable lack of any new statements. I listen to a call-in talk show every morning just so I'll know who they are and what they're thinking. There are vibrations of rabid racism out here. The violence is right below the surface. And she says, and no one here eats grits, nor do they know what Crystal hot sauce is, and the accent is Southern. Southern Alberta, Canada.
Oh, boy. Well, you remember the Germans in Germany?
Yeah.
They weren't from the South either. and Bob, to me, this is all Nazism.
Fascism.
It's all wrapped up together, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascism. It is fascism, pure and simple. You know, David in South Carolina, he says, you know, it's different times. He says, I can remember even here when the yard sign competitions were fun and people laughed them off.
Yeah.
But now the anger is different and has become chronic anger, like in just plain mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he says, the air is combustible. It feels like 1968 or in South Carolina, 1838, 1858, 1868, too. And I'm not doing this to scare anybody, Juanita.
No, but I do totally agree with you, Bob. We're not knocking that girl. She just doesn't know better. But if Bubon encouraged her to do that, then they need to get some sense knocked into them, too.
Well, maybe they need some Southern folk.
Well, I'm always getting emails from them.
Well, you know, like I said, don't be surprised when you see the Move On fundraising drive coming out of this. Don't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised. But, yeah, she needs, like, you know, you don't tempt fate.
No.
I mean, and maybe she doesn't realize how these people think. You know, she believes in the goodness of everybody.
You know what's fascinating? I've got a story here that was sent along to me earlier. A Fox News crew, Juanita, wandered into a Democratic Party meeting in Wisconsin Monday.
Oh, yeah?
Okay, it's Wisconsin. And the crew was headed by a reporter by the name of Steve Brown. And it was the monthly meeting of the Milwaukee Democratic Party. And so Sachin Cheetah, who is the party chairman, asked them why they were there. Hey, why are y'all here? Your company gave $1 million to the Republican Governors Association. And he called them out. He said, do you think it's understandable why Democrats across the country have this reaction when Fox News shows up, that they feel it's not a fair organization, it's a biased organization, and it doesn't give a fair shake to Democrats and Democratic viewpoints? Do you see the difference here? Now, a guy goes to an Eric Cantor meeting and gets his head driven into the pavement.
Yeah.
A woman
yeah.
goes to a Rand Paul debate and gets her head driven into the pavement.
Yeah. Yeah.
A Fox reporter shows up among a bunch of liberal Democrats and gets asked, why are you mean to us?
Yeah.
You know, nobody drove Steve Brown's head into the pavement,
right,
Juanita.
Right. But I'm going to tell you, if they... keep on.
And so, well,
they'd be surprised at what worm turns against them.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the interesting part. Steve Brown says, if you don't want us here, we'll leave. And then the chairman of the Milwaukee Democrats said, I'm not going to kick them out. If they want to stay here and watch us talk about democratic values and democratic issues, I think the Fox News Channel should be welcome to do that. If they want to report about what's going on and what's happening in this election, I think what they'll see is that we're fired up and we're ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, I did want to say a little something about you and Jim were talking about the Romans.
Uh-huh.
I saw a, talking about the, Colosseum. I saw a, 2 or 3 years ago, I guess, I saw that this documentary about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ever want to see it again. It was so disturbing, the things that they did. And I never thought that I would feel sorry for a crocodile. But it was talking about how those animals were kept, and they were depressed. And, I mean, my heart just went out. Even the crocodile, it just was horrendous. And beside what they did to people. But, you know, this a lot of that stuff goes on here, you know. I mean, cockfights, dogfights, fighting to the death, people fighting to the death. They've got something like that on TV now.
Bread and circuses.
Yeah. But honestly, I never thought I would have pity for a crocodile, but I did. But where they talked about how those animals, were the way they kept them in that Colosseum, and how depressed they were. Yeah, I could feel it. I could just feel their depression. You know, not just the crocodile, but all of them. And, I mean, every one of them. Of course, I'm a crazy animal lover, but it just, unbelievable. But like I said, I mean, when my eyes became, I believe, completely clear of what's going on was when we found out about the Abu Ghraib tortures. And I thought, I was dumb enough to think, well, people are not going to like that. But no.
No, they celebrated.
No.
You know, Limbaugh was right there. My friends, it's just like a fraternity prank.
Yeah. And a lot of people think, oh, that's all right. That's fine. And we're no different. I don't care who does it. And now you know it's coming out, is it the Wikipedia or?
WikiLeaks.
What is it?
WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks. Yeah, I saw some of the programming on that this weekend on C-SPAN, and they're coming out with what the British did, too.
And the British want to investigate, bless their hearts. Hey, Juanita,
yes,
I'm going to try to work in a couple more calls before the show's
sorry.
Over. No,
okay.
Don't you apologize.
Well, good night, and I hope everybody's doing fine.
All right. Thank you, Juanita.
Okay.
And bye now.
Bye-bye.
And by the way, welcome to the new folks in the chat room. Good to see Maine Coyote in there. Grateful Spirits in there, along Cosmic Michael, along with a lot of the regulars. It's a great crowd in the chat room. You ought to try it sometime. Onward we go. Wait, I got that wrong. Okay, stop that. Do that. Okay, and that doesn't matter. And neither does that. And try this. Nope. And try this. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brian from New Hampshire there. I want to echo everything you said about the South there. I've been there enough in the military and the service and there and traveling. I know what you're saying about the reactionary. It's like the Serbia of America, the romantic.
Now you're going to piss off the Serbians.
The one-sided romantic view of history, they don't realize that so many Serbs collaborated with the Muslim Ottoman Turkish invaders and with the Catholic Croatians on the Austro-Hungarian Empire. But anyways, I don't want to get on that. I've been phone banking. That's why I've been mostly away from calling or listening. I'm up to about maybe 550, 600 calls total for phone banking for the local Democrats up here and for Democrats all over the country. for Emily's list. I'm going on there tonight for good old Patty Murray out there in Washington State. There, they got a few yahoos out there, I guess, in the interior of Washington State. You know, they do.
Oh yeah, and the same. You know, the same goes in Oregon. Once you get east of the mountains, man, it's Alabama.
I want to question the genetics of their parentage, too. No, I'm just kidding. But that is up here, too, in New Hampshire. The same anger is there. Maybe it's a more polite below the surface, but not always. But the fact is I've been calling people about, you know, like I say, Paul Holes is running for the Senate there. He should be much further ahead in the polls. He shouldn't be behind with this Kelly Oyette, the Tea Partiers hack there. And Carol Shea Porter, they both voted against the TARP bill in September 2008. I remind people of this, the people I call, even independents too, and some Democrats, they have to be reminded, and Republicans I've called, some of them too, they voted against the TARP bill that was in fall 2008, that was under the Bush-Cheney administration, that was scaring the American public to death in the Congress with threats of violence in the streets. In martial law, they did not bail out those Wall Street thieves, and I remind them that Carol Shea Porter and Paul Holtz, God love them, they weren't buying any of it, and they also want to protect Social Security, not to sell out like the Republican sycophants to their Wall Street thieving masterpiece. They don't privatize it and hand it over to these same Wall Street thieves. And also, Carol Shea Porter, she's a veteran herself. Her beloved husband there, Mr. Porter, is a veteran of the U.S. Army. They both are. She made a great Veterans Administration healthcare reform bill in December 2009. I remind Republicans, they hang up the phone on me when I do this to them, but that's the truth. They can't stand the truth. That's what gets them worse than even trying to be too confrontational with you. I know what you're saying. There's some parts of the country you don't do.
Oh, it's like garlic to Count Dicula.
Yeah, and the fact is that the December 2009 Veterans Administration health care bill, it's to make a lot of mental health care and pilot health clinics all over the country for our returning heroes. Not one Republican in the House, she was one of the co-authors of the bill, too. It did pass in the House and later in the Senate. But one single Republican in the House, so-called American House of Representatives, 180, all 180, 190 of them voted no for the Veterans Administration health care reform bill. These are the patriots. I try to remind people of this. But I know that you're so right, Bob. You got to hit them with the truth first of all. That's the biggest ammo we've got, and that's the best ammo to use. And what's left of our democracy. But I'll let you go there. My computer's now in safe mode. It crashed earlier today. My hard drive.
Oh no, I'm so sorry to hear it.
Up and running. Yeah, trying to get it back up and running there, and we'll go back from there. I don't even. My car needs a new windshield wiper motor, Bob. I'm not going to spend over $100 to replace it. I got just driving around on sunny days there. It's in the October's a nice sunny.
Yeah, just drive in the sun.
I already got the Democratic candidates. That's already got, because I know how dangerous these demons are. But you're right about it, Bob. You can't be. There's sometimes you can't be. My damn Irish temper. I think I'd already be dead by now in West Virginia or Alabama or whatever my temperament is. Jewish, Irish, Scottish. You know, like I say, the little Anglo-Saxon with the Douglas clan there that's married into the barbarian Anglo-Saxon that we'll admit to. But I'm nutty enough as it is, but I don't need to move down south. But there's so much, like my mother, we just let her, she went to a trip, they're both retired in Florida, my mom and dad, they went to Savannah, Georgia, the great historical center there and all that too. There's so much of the South that can be so good and so good-hearted. Why do these thugs have to represent that great part of our nation? That's what's the worst part of it, Bob. That's, you know.
I grieve, Brian. I grieve, yeah. Brother. I grieve. But I have to run along, too, because we're almost out of time. I'm so proud of you taking time to volunteer like that. That's damned important. You take care, brother.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And thus we come to the end of the program, and thank you all for joining in. Thanks for new listeners and new chatters in the chat room. That's always exciting to see. You're welcome, and come back just any old time. Tickled to see you. I hate to pitch like this. It's not a pitch. I hate to ask like this, but I really want to see us actually reach our fundraising goal this month, please. You know, like I've said before, if you contribute $10 a month, that means that you're paying roughly 5 cents an hour for the program. And the program's free anyway. But when you do that, you know, you make it possible for anybody who wants to listen. And if you find this valuable and you think this dialogue is important, this conversation is important, then it means it's important that it get further out. and it makes it possible for that to happen. So thank you. Thank you to everybody who has contributed this month and who has contributed all these long years. You know, 5 years now. That's saying something. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who makes this go. This is an entirely volunteer operation. Not just me, not just John Fox, not just Ben Birch. It's an all-volunteer operation. Lottie in the chat room, our moderator, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Matt Osborne, who has a great new video up. OsborneInc.com is the address. Go look. New column up from Reverbo at Cavalcade of Crazy, the Cavalcade of Crazy column at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Go read. Feel free to comment. My head writer is David in Tennessee. None of this happens without the help of John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, and the man who generally helps keep Bob from losing his tiny mind. Ben Birch was on top of a server crash last night before we even knew it happened. That's how dedicated Ben is after a long day at work. WhiteRoseSociety.org has been preserving liberal talk on the Internet since 2002, if you can imagine. Yeah, that long. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org is comprised of the hardest working, bravest people I know, and they're another reason this remains on the air. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.